would be around you somewhere else. You would find that in a problem. Thank you very much. I think we are about 10 or so minutes away from the start. I must really first introduce myself. My name is Matomi Humphrey Mohovi, Chairperson of Select Committee on Cooperative Governance in the OCOP, and it will be proper for members of the committee to introduce themselves, but before that, I'll introduce our House Chair, Honorable Dow, who's the Chair of Chair in the concept of provinces. It's our House Chair here. Then I'll allow other members to introduce themselves and everyone so that we know who's here as we speak.
I am John Gunda from the Northern Cape, a member of this committee. Tunga Matila from Gauteng, a member of the Select Committee.
Oh, I'm Errol Magerman, the Chairperson for Local Government and Housing, Gauteng.
I'm Theo Weilesaad, I'm from the Western Cape, and I'm a member of this committee.
I'm Gladys Muipolai, Chairperson of the Northern Cape Portfolio Committee of COSTA. Thanks.
Wendy Nelson, Portfolio Committee Member, National Assembly.
Lichisa Tenudi, Chairperson Portfolio Committee in the NA.
Look at the money for COSTA.
Zilkas Mainike, the Department of Cooperative Governance.
Toto Gizi, COPTA.
Alwea, Department of Cooperative Governance, the DG.
Johan Method from Salga.
Good morning, I'm Charlie Mutu from the Northwest, Chairperson, Local Government Territorial Affairs.
Yes, it is Kostana, Chairperson, COPTA, Human Settlement, Pumalanga.
Koli Lengata from the Cape Chairperson, Local Government
and
Social Affairs.
Good morning, I'm Nonzaga Sortboy from KZN, Chairperson of COP.
Namazivana Maxwell, Limpopo Province, Treasury and this particular committee. Thank you.
Naparo Sekwati, Limpopo Legislature. Thanks.
Free State Public Accounts. Dumelang Nagi Dennis Bloom, Kitwakwana Free State, Kronstadt, Tropoki Kronstadt. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Bosan Mpuk from the Select Committee on COP.
Good morning. Paul Sirote from the Auditor General.
Jan van Schalkwijk, also Auditor General.
Alice Miller, Auditor General.
Pramesh Shpana from the Auditor General.
Virgazima Filika, Auditor General.
Theo Nell, Auditor General.
Thank you very much. I think now we know who we are. If there is no one left out, let's just go straight to the agenda. The agenda there, we have opening and welcome, which will be done by our House Chairperson, Chairperson on Committees and Oversight, Honorable R.J. Dow.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson Mokovi.
let me take the opportunity also to thank the our colleagues from the National Assembly to be part of this exercise, and of course to also thank the provincial legislatures, chairpersons of COCTA committees, to have taken interest in this kind of an exercise and to be with us today. I must just say, honorable members and officials from the department, including the Auditor General's office, that you would be aware that for some time, as the NCOP, we had developed a relationship with the Office of the Auditor General, particularly with regard to the state of municipalities. As you would know better, that the NCOP as a council of provinces is the best placed house of parliament, which has got a constitutional mandate to ensure that the interests of provinces are being profiled or are brought to the attention of national ministers, whether it be in the process of legislation, in the process of budget. You would note that yesterday we just passed the Division of Revenue as the National Council of Provinces, which is a very key and a very important piece of legislation that then begins to empower provinces to deliver services to our people, especially our rural areas and those kind of areas that would need our intervention as we seek to improve the lives of the ordinary people and in particular the poor. We therefore, on the basis of that, honorable members, developed this relationship with the Auditor General's office precisely because of, as the NCOP, central to what we are doing is also to implement our intergovernmental relations strategy as given to us by the Constitution of the Republic. And the only way to do that, not only profiling the interests of provinces, but in particular of the municipalities. For quite some time now, as the NCOP, we have been making the call, and I'm very happy that SALGA is here, around the participation of SALGA in the affairs of the National Council of Provinces, and in actual fact to use the House as that strategic platform where in which they will be able to raise issues or challenges that are faced by municipalities, because the NCOP then, as in terms of the Constitution, is the only House that allows SALGA to then participate, whether it be in debate, whether it be in budget votes, or whatever issue that are confronting or challenges that are confronting municipalities. That is their platform, which is the National Council of Provinces. And this kind of a relationship, I must say, it has assisted and strengthened also the relationship between the National Council of Provinces and municipalities, in a sense that it has strengthened the committee of the NCOP when it comes to our oversight role over the departments and the municipalities and so forth. So this exercise, which is an annual exercise that we engage with the Auditor General's office, has in actual fact to a great extent assisted us in understanding better, or in having a better understanding of the challenges that are faced by our municipalities in our respective provinces. Of course, based on all these other things that we have seen coming through the service delivery protests and so forth. So we are engaging today with the Auditor General's office again with that particular understanding, that the office will begin then to make us understand much better what are the challenges of our municipalities, why are the gaps in our respective municipalities, what opportunities are available in order for us in doing our oversight will allow us an opportunity to strengthen our municipalities, because not only is it about the implementation of the Section 139 through the NCOP and all those sorts of things. That should in actual fact be the last resort as expected in terms of the law of our country. So this exercise, honorable members, we wish that it would assist us also to have a better understanding, and in so doing, as we will be engaging with the policy debates and threat plans of the department in the next term, because between now and next week, we are all aware that because of the challenges of elections, members will be expected to be in their respective constituencies doing their political work. So when we come back in the next term, for obvious reasons, I think the committee in particular will be better positioned and more strengthened to argue for certain things that the ministry has to look into, having had the benefit of the Auditor General's report on their audit outcomes on municipalities. So on that, Honorable Chair, I take the opportunity to thank you very much, and let's get the ball rolling.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, for words of welcome and also the clear outline of on how, why we are here. Then we'll go to item objective of the workshop, because we already have introduced each other. Let me acknowledge the presence of the Chairperson of Portfolio Committee, Honorable Tinori Lichia from Lichifa, from the NA, and your colleagues. You are heartily welcome. The department, SALGA, the AG's office, and also our counterparts, provincial chairpersons of COPTA from various provinces. I think you are heartily welcome, and you would note that we are beginning to close a gap that was there for some time. And the meeting was called as a result of the workshop we had with the AG, plus the National Assembly was present, that we must begin to engage on these matters that affect the local sphere of government. Now, today in the main, we are to engage with the Auditor General. In particular, we are going to engage and listen to the presentation, and thereafter, through what they shall have presented, and see how do we come together to make sure that we unravel, to make sure that we develop an approach, especially as public representatives, on how we're going to make an oversight and also complement our government to ensure that indeed the objective of the audit that was set out within the context of local government turnaround strategy is realized. It's very much important that as the SOP, which moves from time to time to various provinces, we must band together with our provincial counterparts so that we deal with that issue that we always say, you see Parliament coming, the province not that way. And in most cases, this is the beginning. From here, we'll be coming down and we'll be moving together. We'll use the template, the brief that the Office of the Auditor General will be giving us. I think it will strengthen us a lot. Maybe one would also have to say to the delegate that yesterday we had a pre-meeting with the Auditor General. I believe what they are going to give us is very, 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 very interesting, exciting, and helpful to our oversight work. The other issue that we need to, as this delegate, particularly from here onward, is that how do we enhance that IGR, intergovernmental relation? It is very much important, particularly at legislative level, precisely because at executive level, it is enhanced. You have your mini-mayor, you have the premier coordinating structure, but us as legislators, it's like we are not all, it's there, but very, 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 but in one way or another, our joint share of how do we approach the issues of the challenges within the local sphere of governance. Indeed, the purpose of this workshop is to do exactly that. How do we enhance our IGR within the context of the challenges that will be raised by the audit? How do we move forward to check as whether the department is achieving the targets that they have set? You would know that out of the local government service, it's an absence of operators fleet audit 2040. And that operation has got a point of departure where they're saying 60% of municipalities should not have disclaimers by 2012 or by 2011. How do we move that? Are we moving in the right direction? The other issue is that we need to make sure that not only municipalities, of course, even the department, the disclaimers must be reduced. The other thing is, are we going to be able to achieve that 75% indeed for both municipality and the provincial department to have unqualified reports? That's one challenge that we need to check. By 2040, what system, what program do we have to ensure that indeed we are moving smoothly towards operating clean audit by 2040? It's a challenge. Remember, we have only 3 years left to achieve this. And therefore, we must have, in one way or another, develop a program and understanding. The other challenge that we need to do within the context of what is going to be presented, remember, after the 18th, we might have over 70% new councillors. What do we put in place? What department is putting in place in terms of capacity intervention? That's because we don't want to lose what we've gained, because we've seen an improvement in one way or another towards financial matters. Even that improvement is not that huge, but a movement towards a positive movement is there. How do we sustain that in the light of the new councillors that are coming? What are the plans for that? What are the capacity building strategies, training issues, and all sorts of things? These are some of the issues that we need to do within the context of our mandate, and as we oversee our mandate of accounting to Parliament. What is it that we'll be doing? It's very much important that as public representative, we need to be very, 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 very committed to that. I think to make an emphasis, we need to not to lose the commitment that we are doing today, particularly the committee at SOP side and provincial committee. We will be coming there. We must enhance that communication. And the tool will be given to us today by the Office of the Inspector General. This is a joint workshop called by the SOP and the AG in terms of the commitment that we have done. We've met several times and we've made this commitment. This is the beginning of realizing what we have committed to. I thank you very much. In terms of time, we're supposed to be on session 2, but we still have time. I'm not sure whether the audit is right. Is he right? Thank you. I'm looking at my friend. Thank you. Welcome. You're welcome. You are indeed in time. Therefore, let's take the presentation, and maybe then we'll go a break for a tea after the presentation, so that we are able to, you'll be able to take the whatever you want to contribute. But in most cases, we would prefer that we make a contribution, and while a question for clarity will be welcome, but let's contribute to build our own oversight program out of this presentation. Thank you very much. You're welcome, Mutegeta. Just before, when we were making the introduction, our another half chair was getting in. She needs to be introduced. We have Honorable Magaga, is also a half chair. We have two half chairs in the SOP, particularly dealing with intergovernmental relations, cooperative governance, and international issues. Yes, Ma'am Magaga. Thank you very much. I'll take it home.
Thank you very much, Chair. morning to both the House Chairs, Honorable Makata and the Dao, and to the Honorable Members from the Provincial Structures, as well as the Honorable Members from the National Assembly. And also good morning to my team from the office. We haven't been together for quite some time. I'm glad to see you still alive. Ladies and gentlemen, to all of you, good morning. The introduction that you just made, Chair, is very significant, because it's an introduction that indeed amplifies and complements the work that we've been doing for the country. It's an introduction that puts a cherry on top of the engagement we've had with the various stakeholders, starting from cabinet, going to the provincial premiers and MSCs of COCTA, or local government, or COCTA, as they are referred to in different provinces, as well as MSCs of finance or treasury. There are provinces where we had an opportunity to meet with the whole of cabinet, and I think in the Northern Cape that's what happened. But this time around, we selectively and specifically requested those three players, the premier and the two coordinating MSCs, for an obvious reason that if we are indeed to clear the challenges around local government, we need better coordination, we need better alignment in our interventions and monitoring. And we felt those players within the province are best placed to do just that. We also have had an opportunity to meet with the provincial speakers, together with the chairpersons of local government, or COCTA, or COCTA, finance, as well as the chairs of chairs in the provinces, as well as the chairperson of SCOBA. Once again, the logic is similar, that if we need better coordination, we felt those are the players that are best placed to coordinate and streamline that coordination at a provincial oversight level. We also had an opportunity to engage with SALGA to deal with the same issues and present the same information. We also had an opportunity to specifically meet with the coordinating ministry at a national level, which is the Minister of Monitoring and Evaluation, Minister of Public Service Administration, Minister of Finance. We only had an opportunity to meet with the Acting Minister of COCTA when we met with Cabinet, but he did also express a very keen interest to get the ball rolling insofar as these messages are concerned. And indeed, that engagement has prompted the action by the various heads of the local government coordinating structures in national government, from both Treasury, COCTA, and the Presidency, led jointly by the DG of COCTA and the DG in the Ministry of Monitoring and Evaluation, coming up with specific actions that they plan to take forward in responding to these matters. And at all these engagements, even at the provincial level,
what we have been emphasizing is the need for there to be a joint and coordinated monitoring of the results of local government. That monitoring happening way before we come in as auditors, so that government at all levels, both executively as well as at the level of the oversight, has got a proactive and a very clear perspective and information about how local government is performing. So that when we do come as auditors, we simply confirm that is being seen and simply put a stamp of assurance on the credibility of that information. And I think that's how our democracy is designed and our oversight is designed to work. It's certainly not designed for us as auditors to be the lead providers of what's going on in local government. It's meant to be the other way around. And I must say it is therefore heartening to stand here today and say, out of all these engagements, there has at the level of the provincial executive an appreciation and acceptance of the need to have a troika session every quarter, so that at the level of the premier, as well as the level of those two coordinating MECs, there is an ability and an opportunity created to look a lot more sharper on this information, assisted naturally by the resources that are made available at these departments to do this work, so that when the top leadership looks at this information, they're able to provide guidance, they're able to provide inspiration to the officials to keep on going in terms of what they are providing to them. And also provide, obviously, the ability to make the right interventions and monitor whether those interventions are working as planned. The similar feedback we got, and I'm glad many of the chairpersons from the provincial structures are here. Similar commitment we got from the provincial oversight as well. Although at that level, we still need to go back and have an opportunity to apply our minds to say what ideally ought to be the appropriate level of intervention and monitoring by the provincial oversight if it is to happen in the most effective way. And in a way that does not seek to duplicate what the executive is doing, but that seeks to complement that the executive is doing. I must admit at the provincial level, we haven't gotten to a specific action as to what exactly will be done, but we just identify the areas that need attention. So we do have an opportunity to still go back and do just that. At a national cabinet level, there has been a serious attention given to this information and a serious commitment made to intensify the monitoring that needs to be done on local government. Hence, I'm not surprised that the three coordinating ministries nationally have been very swift in coming up with clear, specific commitments and actions that they're going to do to respond to these messages. And they are now preparing a cabinet briefing that will respond to what next should then happen to keep providing cabinet with the status of performance when it comes to local government. So the remaining engagement that we need to have, before I do that, at SALGA as well, we have in fact gone to the extent of having a specific workshop that identifies the specific action that at a SALGA level will be taken in order to respond to these issues. So most of the engagements we've made have culminated into specific commitments that are very precise and specific about tangible action that will be taken to respond to these messages. So what remains now is to find a way of responding, Chair, to your opening remarks about the model that national oversight needs to apply in responding to these messages. And by the national model, I mean the way in which the National Council of Provinces works on its own, the way in which the National Council of Provinces works with the National Assembly, and identify the committees within the National Assembly that will be most relevant and most placed, and best placed rather, to assist in responding to the monitoring of local government performance. I must admit, I still don't know how that model needs to work, and I'm hoping that this meeting will be able to define how that coordination needs to happen at the national parliamentary level, both National Assembly and as well as NCOP. How the national parliament, and I'm assuming here jointly or singularly between NCOP and the National Assembly, works in collaboration with the provincial structures in order, once again, not to duplicate or nullify what has been done at the provincial level, but also complements and supports it in a manner that takes us all forward. And also how the national parliament works very tightly with the Department of COCTA and Treasury in monitoring what they themselves are doing in providing credible information about local government performance. And similarly, how at a provincial level the executive is doing what they're supposed to do in order to respond to the local government performance issues. So that's the model that I think in our discussion today perhaps could be thought about to define how this coordination could be best done in responding to the specific challenges that we have highlighted in our report. So, Chair, having said that, I want to specifically stand here and welcome the opportunity that you have given us to share this information with yourselves, with the spirit of bringing about permanency in the oversight of local government, bring about permanency in the coordinated and effective way in which oversight is exercising its role in South Africa. And Chair, bring about permanency in the way in which there is greater coordination within oversight so that we can have an oversight that is living up to its constitutional expectation that it should have oversight over the executive about the use of public funds, regardless of the various spheres of government that we have in South Africa. Because at the end of the day, there is a lot of crossovers. At the end of the day, there is a lot of overlaps, and we can get to a point where we debate and argue legally about whether this sphere should interfere or participate or not. Bottom line, the citizens will be the losers, while as leaders in government, we're debating about the merits or demerits of what our work should be like. And I think this session today, I'm looking forward to saying we set aside all the artificial barriers that may have been put in front of us, either by ourselves or by our imaginations, and look straight at how we benefit the citizens in the way in which we will work collectively to respond to that challenge. So I'm really lifting this thing, this debate, Chair, to that level, so that we don't look at this slide in a superficial manner, but to look at this slide with that end in mind. Also, Chair, having said that, I do trust that by the end of this session, we'll be able to walk away with specific commitments, as you've indicated, that we will then incorporate into our general report, which is not as yet finalized. This session is a discussion session. This is not a tabling of a report session. As I've indicated, it's a discussion session with a workshop. So that what once you commit to putting information in writing and use that information in the general report as a guide for our action, we know that it's information that we can all claim some input into. So we are planning that the general report should be ready and tabled in all the legislatures, both the consolidated general report for the whole country as well as provincial specific general reports. We'll be ready for tabling in all the legislatures, including national parliament, sometime towards the middle of June or so. We're still working out the exact details of when we can do that, if we're to do it with perfection, so that it is a document that we can use with pride to take us all forward. This general report, we're looking forward, and it's a specific request made in all the provincial engagements, as a basis of conducting the orientation, as you've mentioned, Chair, for the new leadership that will be assuming council responsibilities and executive responsibilities in local government. So that's why we feel that this session has got that level of importance and significance. Okay, so that's enough for the introduction. Now the specifics of the information that we'll now seek to complement this introduction that I've just made. Let's go to the next slide. When we made visits to the provincial structures, we did not provide information about the national picture. There were requests and curiosity that arose at the time, but I must be honest, it was important for us not to do that in order to focus our minds on what the issues are at a specific provincial level. Here today, I'm glad that the provincial representatives are also here so that we can be able to see the picture in perspective in relation to what we've already discussed at a provincial level. If you look at all the municipalities in South Africa, most of them have submitted the information, most of them have been audited, and in fact, they've all been audited to the extent of, out of the 283 municipalities, 237 have been audited to completion. We've got 46 that have not been finalized. That number has changed slightly as we speak today, but not by much. I think about 10 may have been subsequently finalized of the 46 that were not completed in time. But the bulk of those that are not completed reside in the province of the Northwest, and it's mainly municipalities that did not have the ability to submit the information in time for auditing, and to date they're still struggling in making means to provide that information on account of skills challenge. The introduction of graphing municipalities has given them a challenge, but it's a challenge that we don't understand, because the rest of the municipalities and the majority of them have been able to respond to that and have submitted and subjected themselves to the same information that these municipalities in the Northwest seem to be struggling to respond to. The other municipalities that are part of that, the bulk of them are in the Northern Cape, but some of them, in fact, most of them in the Northern Cape are close to completion now. So I hope that by the time we put together the general report, we'll be able to amend that line and update it with the subsequent picture as at the time we table the report. But at the moment, it would have been a bit tricky to keep chopping and changing this information while the audit process is still in motion. So of those that have been audited to completion, the vast majority of them have moved was unqualified report. The vast majority of them have moved away from the disclaimers. And the reason we have a caution around the disclaimer line is because there are municipalities that have not as yet been finalized in terms of audit, and we don't know where they're going to end up when they are, that audit is finished. But generally, the picture does look brighter in terms of the migration towards a better audit result. Even those that have moved towards clean audit reports have increased marginally, and most of them, in fact, there's one province that has got the majority, that claims the majority of that seven that have moved towards clean reports is in Mpumalanga. They've got three municipalities that have achieved and acquired that status. And if I correlate those municipalities with the experience we've had of the leadership that we have seen in those municipalities, I'm not surprised that that is the case. I know that in Mpumalanga, there may be other municipalities that are not in that category, but they are knocking very hard on that door, especially the districts. Local municipalities are still struggling quite extensively, but the districts, I'll be surprised if they don't break that barrier and get into that category in Mpumalanga. The details of these municipalities are provided in an annexure here that is, which you can read at your own time and own pace. It's annexure one. So you'll be able to see it's got all the columns about what the audit outcomes are for municipalities. But for this session, the intention is not to be specific about the names, but to look at the principle. But if you want to know the names, they are all, for the whole country, reflected in annexure one, including those that have not as yet submitted their information. When it comes to public entities are also showing a greater degree of increased performance. As last year, we only had one public entity that fell into the category of clean reports. If I remember well, I think it was in Johannesburg, the fresh produce market. This year, we've got 10 municipal entities that have claimed that status, and most of them are in Johannesburg. And it's not surprising, in Gauteng rather, and Johannesburg municipality, or metro. And it's not surprising that that is the case, because that is the only metro that has got a long list of municipal entities. No other metro in the country has got more than three or five municipal entities. In fact, if they've got three, it would be a lot. Joburg has got double-digit entities. And therefore, it is to be expected that they would have that kind of picture when it comes to the municipal entities. And if you look at the 54 municipal entities that exist around the country, almost more than a third of them are concentrated in Johannesburg Metro. The other picture that is important in this slide is the fact that, once again, the reasons for municipalities not migrating towards clean audit reports is simply because of two reasons only. It's the ability to account effectively and properly for service delivery information. Of the 237 municipalities that have been audited, 220 have not been able to account for this information in a manner that is prescribed by Treasury. And therefore, it's going to be difficult to say you've got a clean bill of health when information that is at the heart of local government, at the heart of citizen expectation, is not presented meaningfully or clearly. Then we can say, it's difficult for us to say you then have a clean bill of health. And if therefore there's got to be any intervention, it's got to be happening at that level. Second area is the area of compliance. Compliance relates to the laws that this Parliament, National Assembly, yes, provincial legislatures have put in place, but predominantly national parliament, jointly with the NCOP, National Assembly, jointly with the NCOP, have put in terms of how local government has got to be run. Those laws are the ones that we pay specific attention to when we do the audits and come back with a response as to the extent to which municipalities have adhered to what Parliament has enshrined in the laws of this country. And therefore, it's going to be difficult to say you've got a clean bill of health when there is a trend, an element of the significant aspects of those laws that have not been adhered to by the municipalities. And therefore, if our attention has got to be directed towards interventions and monitoring, it ought to be in that area, which I think resonates and sits squarely in why we're meeting here today, because you've promulgated those laws, but those laws are not necessarily being respected where they should be respected. And therefore, before we move to a situation where we say there's a clean bill of health in local government, we should make sure that and confirm that all those laws, especially the significant aspects thereof, are being adhered to. So that's the picture that we're painted in so far as local government is concerned. That picture is no different when it comes to public entities, because the majority of them also have got shortcomings in those areas of service delivery, presentation and reporting, as well as compliance with laws and regulations. I would be more specific as we move forward in terms of which aspects of laws and regulations are most requiring attention. This picture becomes even a lot more clearer when you look at to what extent municipalities have improved, have remained stagnant, and have regressed. And that would be, insofar as municipalities are concerned, in fact, when I saw this picture, I was also equally surprised, because it really painted a much more clear and accurate record of how we should interpret local government performance. Because in spite of all the challenges local government is facing, in spite of all the concerns we may be having about local government, but there is movement. And there is movement in the positive direction. This information is telling us that of the 237 municipalities that have been audited, 57 of them have registered better results than last year. And of those 57, 5 have entered into the terrain of clean audits. And 2 have maintained that status. It means that it is not impossible to maintain a clean audit status if 2 municipalities can afford to do that in the country. I know it's a single digit, and it may sound like a very insignificant record, but it's a reference point to say, how did they do it? And if they have done it, why can't the others also do it? A record number of 26 have moved into the terrain of unqualified reports, away from qualified reports. Another 26 of the 57 has moved away from the worst opinions, which is disclaimers and adverts, into at least areas that have got qualifications, but not too many areas. So, I mean, 57 over 237 is quite a sizable percentage for us to really begin to say we are making some progress. Although it may not be enough, but at least it is moving in the right direction. And the question is, how do we sustain that? 164 of these municipalities of the 237 have remained with the same audit opinion. Let me start with the 93 that have remained with unqualified reports. And this is where we've got an opportunity to say, how do we get these municipalities that have demonstrated the ability to clear audit queries, to clear accountability challenges, that consistently throughout the year, so that not only when the auditors come that they get given that kind of data, but with or without the external auditors, they also demonstrate a clean administration in their entities. So here we've got an opportunity to really move these municipalities in mass, and we know where to focus if we want to do that. It's compliance issues and service delivery reporting issues, by and large. And if we can do that, we'll be able to be proud as South Africans to say we've got clean administration in our municipalities. And it's not something that is impossible. There are 18 that have remained with qualifications. But what's most concerning for me is the 51 that still remained with the worst opinions. 51 that still remained with the worst opinions. And if I were to enumerate in which jurisdictions those exist, they would by and large be in the Northern Cape, in the Eastern Cape. I'm going to exclude Northwest at the moment because most of them have not been finalized for auditing. Free State is also part of that equation. Yeah. And an interesting contrast, Mpumalanga, although they've got very excellent extremes, but they also got another amazing extreme when it comes to the worst opinions. And I think those are some of the provinces, if we are to place a greater degree of concentration, we need to start working with and supporting enormously so that we remove the worst opinion in the local government sphere. If I look at the northeast and northwest, there is a column there that says 46 municipalities have not as yet been audited to completion. Last year, of that 46, the great majority, 33, had worst opinions. Adverse or disclaimer. And the bigger concentration of those is sitting both in the Northern Cape as well as in the Northwest. Anyway, there are a balance like 5 in the Eastern Cape that were not even completed. Most of them are sitting in that category. So if we were to make, although as auditors don't like to make assumptions, we like to deal with facts, but if we were to make a loose assumption that if those municipalities get their results finalized, likelihood is that the majority of them will still remain where they were. Because out of the 10 that have been finalized, 50% have moved, 50% have remained where they were. And if you look at the reasons why the others have not been finalized, and you look at the skills level, and you look at the leadership level there, there's no hope that unless there's serious interventions, they are likely to have a better result than what they had last year. But in terms of the geographic concentration, is those that I've just highlighted. And the list of who they are in terms of the identity of the municipalities, an extra one will give you that picture very clearly. There is a trend that is got to be extinguished at all costs. Those municipalities that do well and then go backwards. Fortunately, there's only 16 of them that have demonstrated that habit out of the 237. And I think here we've got an opportunity to nip this one in the bud, because we just can't afford to have gains and then reverse those gains without any justification. And if you look at the trend, I mean, of the 16, 9 of them, close to 60% have gone to the worst opinions. And 6 of them, which is another majority, have gone into qualified which means they've moved from an unqualified report back to a qualification, which means that they did well the previous year, they sort of let it slip. And we just can't afford to have trends like those if we are really to take our governance and accountability to a better spot. We've got a similar picture for municipal entities. Once again, for municipal entities, of the 49 that have been audited to completion, the vast majority, 25, remain where they were last year as having unqualified reports. Once again, there's an opportunity here that we can move them to a better spot. In a better spot, that the 10 entities that have demonstrated this trend, most of them are in Joburg, two of them are in Cape Town, I think that's about it, and I think one of them is in the Eastern Cape. They've been able to do that, and therefore the rest of the other 25 should be able to do that also, because the entities have got a much better privilege in terms of the capacity to perform and report impressively. And therefore, if they don't, we should be much more harder in asking questions why they can't when they've got all the resources. So that's the broad picture that I can paint for that one. And fortunately, not too many of them have regressed. Only two have regressed. And once again, as I've indicated, that's a situation we should work towards avoiding at all costs. The new entities that came into the picture are fresh. They have at least not started on a monumental disaster. They have at least have unqualified reports, and one of them, the three of them, one, two had unqualified reports, and one had a qualification. And once again, that ought to have been a condition of their formation in the first place, that when you justify for a new existence, are you ready to then report meaningfully on your results? Once again, if you need the name thereof, an extra one will help us to clear that curiosity. I thought, let me stay in these three slides and explain them in detail so that we can really, when we interpret the results of local government, see them in this perspective. So that we don't interpret them this way, and depending which side of the bed you woke up in this tomorrow, you interpret that way. In my view, that's an official interpretation based on facts of how local government is and has performed in the year 2010, year ending 2010. Now, why have these results been like this, and what are the factors that have given rise to this? I'm going to move a little bit faster on this one so that at least we can also understand what are the main drivers that we need to act on to respond to these outcomes. Because if you talk clean audit 2014, Chair, as you've emphasized, this is the picture we need to aspire towards, so that when we put this picture, we can see everyone sitting under the improvement and maintaining that improvement, not going up and down. So that would be our I don't know how to call it, our shining light that we should be working towards. And when you put this picture, it should be a picture that makes us all proud as South Africans. Now, why are we not there yet? If you go to the next information, I'm going to skip this one because I've already spoken. Maybe we can just go back just to explain how it reads. We're going to still do some more work on this picture, because what it's showing here is all those municipalities that have improved, stayed the same, and regressed. We're just highlighting them in terms of the province. Which province have had the biggest number of improvements, regressions, or unchanged situations? situation. That unchained situation, I just want us to break it a little bit more. Because you can see there, for instance, let's say KwaZulu-Natal, unchanged 54. But for KwaZulu-Natal, that unchanged is sitting at financial and qualified. And if you contrast that with the similar peer, which is in size, Eastern Cape, that unchanged in Eastern Cape is sitting mainly in streamers. So we need to look at that in perspective. So that's why for the general report, I just want us to have a much more detailed analysis of this so that we can see what this picture looks like per province without having to go through the detailed and extra one unnecessarily. Now, the issues that have given rise to these qualification disclaimers, we presented a slide this time around that shows an interesting phenomenon of repetitive findings. All these disclaimers, all these qualifications that have happened in the municipalities that have had these qualifications have happened repeatedly in capital assets. 73% of municipalities have had this time and time and time again. In the past, we used to present this picture differently and show a comparative from year to year. I think we're running out of space now for comparatives. Now we've reduced it to now one bar that says, how many times is this repeating itself? And I think the more we see a picture like this, which says 73% of municipalities, three quarters, are having the same findings, we should be asking ourselves, why is that so? And should it be necessary? And should we not be dealing with the circumstances that give rise to that condition? Current assets, which is predominant in local government, issues of inventory, issues mainly of the debtors, is also a repetitive pattern that is happening in local government. Issues of liabilities. The slowdown of municipalities owed to others, whether it's ESCOM, whether it's the Auditor General, or when any service provider, is an issue that is also coming up repetitively, and so on with regard to the others. All these figures are happening at the level of 75% on average, and therefore we should be concerned and be in a position to say, what can we do to reduce this pattern? And I do think that if you apply our minds clearly, we should be able to say, are these repetitions justified? And if they are justified, what are we doing about them to eliminate that justification? And if they are not justified, what consequences are there for those that keep showing that pattern? And it's only a small percentage of municipalities that have got new issues or that have avoided those issues at all for this year. On average, what is about 12% of municipalities that have moved away from last year's qualifications, which is a very small percentage. And also, around 50% also is a number that is recycling those issues after they've cleared them a year before. So Chair, here I just wanted to highlight the repetitiveness of these findings. To understand better the issue of compliance and service delivery, it's shown better in this picture, where, and we've shown this in two parts. There are municipalities that have got unqualified reports. But the only reason they're not moving to clean reports is because they've got these issues of compliance, they've got these issues of service delivery. And 94% of them are stuck there. And they've got those issues as a combination of problems. And it's only in one instance of 6%, four municipalities, that only have an issue with compliance. But the rest have got a combination. And therefore, if we intervene, if we make any support, provide any support, it's got to be done collectively. And interestingly, these issues are overlapping because within service delivery, there are issues of legislation compliance that need to be attended to. for those municipalities that have had qualified unqualified reports. But I mixed up my statistics there. There are municipalities that have got unqualified reports that have got the majority of the issues relating to those two concerns that I've highlighted at the beginning. And just to revise that so that I just correct my message, 84% of the unqualified municipalities have got that as an issue. 5% only have an issue with service delivery, 7 municipalities, and only 2%, which is 8 in this case, have got issues on compliance. The 7 that have got paid reports have neither of those issues. So this picture is consistent with what we've seen in the first result of the audit outcomes. Now, those that have got qualifications, either disclaimer or other qualifications, the vast majority, which is 94%, have got a combination of those issues. And only 6%, which is 4, have got only an issue around compliance. I think this is a very important slide that puts things into perspective in terms of the magnitude of the challenge. With regard to if it, we break down this issue of service delivery further, last year we had 37% of municipalities that did not submit information on service delivery. This year that number has reduced to only a quarter, 25%, that did not submit at all. That is, those that have been audited of the 237, but did not submit on service delivery. And I guess it's something that ought not to be encouraged. And of those that submitted and were audited, there has been minimal, in fact, no movement, according to this statistic, on issues of compliance with the Treasury regulatory process of reporting service delivery information. Last year, we had 88% of the municipalities sitting there. This year, we still have the same number, 88%, struggling to report in terms of Treasury requirements. The Treasury requirements, maybe I can just explain it very briefly. They are the same as what we spoke about during PFMA. And in local government, it's even better because it's a lot more explicit. You make promises to the citizens. You get given funds to respond to those promises. And all this requires is to be able to say, this is what you said you'll do. What have you done with the money that you've been given to do? And that reconciliation and alignment in between is very, very, very fuzzy in municipalities. We're struggling to correlate between what was done during the community engagement to how that got recorded in the IDPs, how those IDPs got translated into strategy plans, or what they call SDBs in municipalities, how those strategy plans got translated into action plans that are allocating these responsibilities to specific departments, specific people, specific, you name it. And even, for that matter, to specific spheres of government, because municipalities sometimes do get faced with a situation of unfunded mandates. But if you make a promise that will be fulfilled by a national department, it's important that you record that clearly in terms of who is going to fulfill that and what resources do you have to monitor that promise that the national department or provincial department has made or the district has made is going to be made good. And these are the issues that are giving a great degree of challenge in the consistency of recording by the municipalities. And worse off is the ability to say now, spend this money. How do you confirm that we spend according to what we promised? And I think it's important that we close that loop very neatly in local government. And if the few municipalities municipalities can do that, we should be able to learn from those and adopt those systems and those practices, because I must admit, I mean, maybe other than a few municipalities, most of this information is done manually. And therefore, there can be no justification to say we need a system to record service delivery results. You don't need a system for that. You just need logical recording of consistent and transparent information. That's what it means. In terms of the usefulness of this information, last year we had about 60% of information not being readable in terms of being simple, measurable, etc. That number has increased by 10% this year to 68%, and we need to contain that. And in terms of providing information, evidence for that, at least there's a good sign that when the municipalities say we've built this school, we've built this house, that they at least can produce evidence that that has happened. Last year it was 55% that could not do that. This year it's only 47% that are struggling, have struggled with that. But it's still a high ratio that we're having. I think, Chair, that it's important that you pay maximum attention to this, because this is where we get in South Africa into a debate which is unhealthy, that says what's the use of focusing on compliance issues when we are delivering services. That debate is very rife in South Africa. That debate is mischievous in my view. That debate is not helping us. If you have delivered services, you should equally be transparent enough to say this is the way I've done it. This is how it talks to the manner in which it should be provided as evidence. And a couple of municipalities in South Africa have demonstrated the discipline and the will to do that, and therefore all municipalities should do that. I don't think it's helping South Africa draw us into this debate, because it's a debate that's going to take us nowhere. Parliament has put a law, Parliament has put a guide as to how this information should be produced, how this information should be presented, and if we don't do that, I don't think we should make other excuses and justification why it could not be done. And that's why I'm placing emphasis in this slide, to say let's deal with these issues, because this is not the Auditor General's making, this is parliamentary making. Only saying what you expected to be done is not being done up there. And something, therefore, ought to be done by yourselves in making sure that things are done in the manner in which you prescribed them to be done. Because there was a reason, and a very, very valid reason for that matter, why you wanted these things to be done in this manner. And when Treasury provided clearer guidance on how that legislation would be made good, that Treasury guide ought to be respected. Compliance is another twin sister or twin brother of service delivery. And when you talk compliance, the vast number of issues here that need to be given prominence are issues of errors in financial information. Of the 237 municipalities that have been audited, 188, which is a big number, have had to have their information corrected at the time of the audit. That's a huge percentage. During the general report, we also put some percentages to these, because they tend to give a better perspective of this. The second area that we need to attend to is issues of governance support. Governance support, we mean audit committees, we mean internal auditors. Both finance management legislation in South Africa places a great degree of importance to this requirement, MFMA and PFMA. And therefore, we ought to put every thing possible to make this happen, because it's for a good reason. We've got to get people that can do this. We've got to get people. There's no shortage of them, in my view, in South Africa. I think, in my view, it's just a question of the leadership will to make this happen. and therefore make a superficial reason about the shortage of the skills. I don't think that there's a shortage of internal audit skills in South Africa. There's no shortage of audit committee skills in South Africa. They are there, we don't find them. Because they're going to do us good. The third category is supply chain. Once again, these figures are in several digits. If you look at supply chain results that resulted in irregular expenditure, 137 of 237 is quite a high number. And other supply chain results that had just other irregularities is quite a high number, 102. And if you put them together, that goes to quite a big number, 200 and a bit. 239. And there's another unusual phenomenon where in other municipalities we just find an avalanche of non-compliance by the officials and leadership to what they're supposed to comply with. And these are examples, for instance, of do you hold council meetings? Do you submit these reports? Something as basic as that. And in most municipalities, it's not concentrated in all the provinces, but there are provinces where this is most acute. Where we say mayors or county officers being MMs, not adhering to their statutory responsibility. 138 is a big number of 237. And those are some of the issues that can be cleared very quickly from the system. So that's a summary of some of the touch points when it comes to compliance issues that we believe require urgent attention. I know there will be others that will reveal themselves, but they're not as significant as these that we've just highlighted. And if we can deal with these, they will then deal with the rest of the other symptomatic non-compliance issues. On irregularities, we've got a very interesting picture. That if you take all the municipalities combined in South Africa and you look at just the 2 years, we didn't go back to the last 5 years, but I'm sure if necessary we could do that. But if you look at just the last 2 years, the middle piece, which is irregular expenditure, that is driven largely by supply chain issues. We're talking here, if you combine last year and this year, something close to 6 billion of irregular expenditure for local governments. I know it may be a small figure if you look at it in relation to the total budget of local governments, but 6 billion, regardless, is not a small number. It's a lot of money that is spent irregularly. What's important here is that what has been done about it? Only of the 6 billion, only less than 100 million, only 77 million has been regularized as we speak. For this year, we haven't measured how much of the last year's 2.5 billion has been regularized. But I won't be surprised that even that figure is very, very small. When it comes to the first area, which is unauthorized expenditure, basically municipalities spending beyond their means, we're talking here, if you combine last year and this year, close to, 7 billion? Which is no wonder some of the municipalities have got financial difficulties. And of that, only 1 billion of the 7 billion has been responded to, either by condoning or regularizing or writing off or refunding or whatever manner in which that occurrence was regularized. We've got a small version of that in terms of fruitless and wasteful, but it's not big in the bigger scheme of things of irregular expenditure and unauthorized expenditure. The moral of this message is that I don't think it matters how much of irregular expenditure we have, although it would be important to avoid it. But that most of it is not disclosed voluntarily. Most of it is picked up by the auditors. We need to have a situation where municipalities avoid irregular practices. Because then in that case, you don't have to commission resources to correct what has been done wrong. But where something has been done wrong, we need to be swift in responding to the corrective measure, which is enshrined in the legislation in terms of how we clear and condone these practices. Some of them may be complex because they may point to serious transgressions that may require disciplinary action. But we don't know because very little of it has been responded to. Some of it may just be a quick administrative motion that will clear this very, very quickly. But we don't know the conditions and nature of either of these conditions. And if we want to talk about oversight, this is where either provincial legislatures, national legislatures, or even municipal legislatures have got to put their heads together and respond to this situation. I've already made mention of the extent of errors in financial statements. This picture is simply just showing where it originates itself. For municipalities that had unfinancial, that have clean reports, most of them did not have errors to be corrected in their financial statements that they presented. This means it can be done. Those that had unqualified financial statements but had to be assisted by auditors to get to that point, there's a lot of them. 114 of them had to be assisted by the auditors, but those that had disclaimers, you also had quite a big number that had these errors but did not bother to correct them. And we should be asking ourselves the question, why not? So this is just another picture that says there's more to be done if we're to intervene meaningfully. But this is pointing us to where the intervention should be. Now, this last slide that talks about these occurrences is the one of the use of consultants. In South Africa, we adore, we encourage, we support the use of consultants because we know that municipalities have got a major challenge of capacity, especially when it comes to financial practices. But we need to manage consultants a lot more effectively. 90% of municipalities use consultants in order to respond to their statutory responsibility of accountability. And of that 90%, the statistics say 10% of what we found do that because they don't have people employed, which means the rest of the municipalities are superimposing consultants over and above people that are employed to do the job. So they're basically paying double the cost, if not triple sometimes, because consultants' fees tend to be higher than the salary cost. But we haven't measured that. I think it would be nice to one day, when we have time, to measure that. But in terms of value we're getting from consultants, it's only in 30% of instances where there's been a reduction in errors of financial information that we've had to audit, which is not so good. It's only in just less than 50% of cases where there's been transfer of keys. And that figure is very misleading because it's concentrated largely in one province. Maybe two, if you stretch it. But the bulk of the municipalities, if you spread this per province, have got very low percentage of transfer of keys. But we've seen that phenomenon, in fact, the last two, being very impressive in the case of the Western Cape, where the reduction of errors of information that we have had to audit has been reduced significantly. I think even up to close to 70-80%. We've got very accurate information to audit. Transfer of skills that's being managed very tightly, and we're seeing a very high percentage of transfer of skills by those consultants. And therefore, if you discount the Western Cape, that figure is going to basically drop bottom. There may be one or two other provinces that may just try to save the game, but the vast majority had their hopeless results in that area. And I'm saying this just to say, let's not condemn consultants, but let's manage and work with them in a manner that's going to benefit government and see those benefits coming through. And involve them at the right time so that we don't involve them when it's too late for them to do anything about the situation. That's the management and monitoring that I'm talking about. So, Chair, that was the first part of the message, to put the results and the facts as they were, in terms of our audit. The second part is about, that's now talking to us now as a leadership.
Just a request, 1 o'clock, the venue will be occupied by others. If we could just deal with the brief important issues.
Thank you, Chair. This is the last part, which is the second part, Chair. I'm going to do it very shortly and quickly. On the second part, we've categorized it into three parts. First, how have we experienced local government action, that is mayors and councillors, in responding to this action? Chair, just going to talk to your introductory remarks about the handover to the new leadership in local government. Up to now, we have been to 7 municipalities that I've had the privilege of visiting door-to-door, 7 provinces. I only have 2 provinces to go to. And in those door-to-doors, I've been talking to the mayors and councillors personally, and saying you have got the ability to set the right tone to lead these municipalities. You've got the ability to direct the disciplines when it comes to financial management. You've got the ability to strengthen your municipalities when it comes to governance support. And I haven't come across a single mayor that says, this is not my job and I cannot do it. All of them have understood why this is important for them. But those that did what they promised to do are only in the tune of about 30%. Those that are attempting to do what they're supposed to do is another third. And the other third are those that have not done what they demonstrated that they can do. Now, when you do this handover and we do this orientation, I think this is one thing that needs to be emphasized about the role of the mayor, the role of the councillors in providing leadership in local government. And it's been a very clear correlation between that interest in leading, and this is not new news, I mean, it's almost a standard message that we communicate to Parliament in South Africa, and the results of the audit outcomes. If you look at these numbers, and the 3 municipalities that I've spoken about, and the 2 more that I spoke about in Mpumalanga, if you look at the mayors in those municipalities, there is a direct correlation between their results and the tone that they set as leaders. That's including the rest that are also on the road to prosperity. So, all I can emphasize here, Chair, is the choices that we make in appointing these leaders is what is going to determine the results we get when it comes to local government performance. The effort that we put having appointed those leaders, the effort that we make to support them and monitor their performance, has got to make a huge difference. If we leave it to chance, I think it's going to, especially given the fact that, as we said, 80% of the leadership in local government is going to be new, we going to see the worsening of the situation, and we don't want to see that. And that's why we have made ourselves available at the time of planning your orientation, and it's the same message we've been saying in the provinces, to support you in emphasizing this message, so that those that we've spoken to directly and continue to speak to them in every quarter in the municipalities provincially don't walk away with that information, but we transfer them, that information, to the new leadership while they're still fresh, while they're still trying to find out what it is that this office means for me. That's the minimum support we can collectively do. Once we've done that, we need to keep monitoring whether they're doing what they're supposed to do. This, for me, is the make or break of the local government of us. If it fails here, the rest can do something, but they're not going to make it happen. Because these are the people that are put in the forefront and front end of local government performance. The second category of analysis that we did was the... Just carry on. The provincial support. There's something that provincially, both at an executive level and at the level of the oversight, can be done to provide the support. We appreciate and have noted that something is being done, but all we noted is that these interventions are not as focused as they're supposed to be. There's a lot of activity, but there's minimal focus on what really matters. And what matters, we've listed in this document as issues of supply chain, issues of service delivery, issues of financial management, issues of turnaround strategies, IT in government, computer systems in local government is a big issue. There's a slide that talks to that, which was very evident that it needs great support. Issues of human resource capacity in local government. And also the issues of how we manage and use consultants. When municipalities are subjected to administration, whether we actually monitor that effectively. What we've noted here is that there's a lot of administrative support that is provided to municipalities, which is not necessarily done formally in terms of the legislation. There are administrators that are there, but their confirmation of being there, if you go to Northwest, for instance, many municipalities are in administration, but if you look at the formalization thereof, it's just a loose support that either the minister or the province has done to at least do something to rescue the municipality. But it has not been done in terms of the full might of what the law intends. And that's why you may think that there's few municipalities that have got administrators. It's only those that have done it formally. And lastly, the issue which I believe is easiest to achieve, providing governance structures in municipalities, audit committees and internal auditors. At both provincial level, local, oversight and executive, we're saying there is some measure of activity that's happening, but it's not good enough. We want to turn this slide to a green picture, but there are very few greens, as you can see here. I'm not saying nothing's happening. I'm saying something is happening and a lot is happening, but it's not focusing on what really matters. So that's a debate we've held in every province where we've been. And I must say that at least those workshops that we'll be having will help us to get to that point. The last one is on national support. We've spoken about the two, and we've engaged with the two, which is the national executive, which is jointly expected to be done by COPTA, National Treasury, DPSA, and Presidency. And as I've said, the directors general have started on a very accelerated pace to respond to this. I've spoken to SALGA. SALGA has also committed to rethink their interventions in this respect. We're only speaking to National Assembly and the LCOP today. We don't know what we're going to do. But all we know, as I said, Chair, your coordination and your support in the intervention is not having the desired effect. And we're here today to say, what therefore can you do? In conjunction with National Assembly, in conjunction with the provinces, in conjunction with the National Executive and Provincial Executive and local government to find a space in this campaign. Bottom line is that all of us have got to do something and do something towards what matters for us to see the results. We provided a document which we're not necessarily going to discuss here today, but we just wanted to take home and say, as a national oversight structure, what are we going to do? One or two things when it comes to those specific issues. And we're very insistent about that, because that's where things need to be done. And then at some stage, I think our parliamentary coordinators may find time to engage with you, as they did yesterday, to collate some of those thoughts so that we can once again incorporate them into our general report. Okay, those are a few thoughts I had, which have had to take this amount of time, but I hope it has been very informative, and I look forward to a follow-up feedback from your side in terms of what your thoughts are with regards to your opening remarks. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that detailed presentation. And indeed, it was a naked presentation. We need to dress that person so that the person is dressed. We cannot leave things like that. Whatever it takes, colleagues, let's engage. There were even some of the recommendations that we made, I think you have noted them. We need to speak to them so that at the end, there is a plan that takes us forward. I would recognize Honorable Gunda, you are number one. Number two, Bethel. Number three, Watson. Number four, this is Honorable from Northwest or Northern Cape. Yes. On this side, Honorable Mpopo, Matila, like that. Yeah. Gunda?
Thank you, Chair. Let me first say thank you to the AG for being so honest and give us a clear report what's really happening on the ground and in this country. Thanks for the municipalities who really doing their utmost to do the right things. But and thanks for the homework, AG, that you've given us as an NCOP and NA, that we really need to get involved in what we are supposed to do. Chair, I don't have a question for the AG. Just have one comment, Chair. Because everything that we had questions for is in those papers, but I would like to make this one comment. And I plead with all MPs, my colleagues and MPs here and MPLs now. I think it's time that we adhere to the advice that the AG is giving this legislature. It's high time that we take the advice very, very seriously and not playing with the advice. The impact of this report, it's a sign of what's happening in our poor communities. And we keep on saying we are the government for the people, we are a people's government. Then we must show it we are a people's government. And all I'm saying, Chair, please bear with me with this one thing. There's a very important slide on this. And I would just draw your attention to that one. I think it's the one that the AG has just brought now.
is on page 19. If you look to that slide, and then there's one, just the last one, page 20. It's legislative oversight, NCLP, and a portfolio committee. So in other words, it's totally red. It's a sign of we are not doing enough as a legislature to do our job properly, to do oversight. And then there's another slide on this question. What I'm saying, that's why, where it is, yes. The one of slide 10, page 10. If in 2 years' time, 6 billion rand can be wasted on local government, 6 billion, how much more, what more do we need to see that we really need to intervene if 6 billion rand of taxpayers can be wasted just like that? It's a serious, serious, serious question, Chair, that we need to ask ourselves. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. In that order?
Honourable Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity, and I would also like to congratulate the openness of the Auditor General's presentation. As I was only a few months ago still an executive mayor of a good municipality, I just want to make four comments. We can sit here all day and make deliberations about what you must do and what we can't do. The first thing is, if we are not going to be serious to appoint the right councillors and the right officials in this financial department, so we're going to go nowhere. Because I have proof where a traffic officer was appointed as the CFO of a district municipality, and with the result that in 5 years' time they had 7 municipal managers. Now this kind of management can never go on, and we will get nowhere, and we will even waste more money. I think we have the potential in this country to resolve the problem. And it is also so that the audit of nowadays is very professional done. It is a bit complicated. It costs a lot of money for the municipality. My municipality's audit cost last year was 3 million rand. It's a lot of money that you can use. For example, with 3 million rand, you can electrify a whole township. But the fact is, you can get the result and the support from the Auditor General. You can go on. So what I'm saying, we must start with two things. Responsibility to political parties to appoint the correct councillors and mayors so that they have the appropriate skills to get the administration in good shape and appoint good administrative personnel to do the job. The second thing is that we must have a look. That is the role of the provincial intervention. If you have a province that can intervene, fine. But I would like to make a comment, and I'm not going to be scientific at this stage, but that's the way I see it. I think so the state of the provinces are sometimes in more of a disaster than the municipalities. So how can you oversight if your own situation is so bad that you can go? And we can say that we must go for the oversight, but to have an oversight on financial issues from NCLP or from the National Assembly, then we must send people there with the knowledge, what to come and oversight. Just to say we have lost a lot of money, that might be so. But the fact is, how are we going to do the oversight? How are we going to get the support to the municipalities? And how are we going to get the service delivery running? But the fact of the matter is, you must get value for money. We have municipalities, 48-50% of this money is running for on salaries. The mayor, 7-8 personnel in his office. But other municipalities, 24% of the total budget is going to salaries, and they are performing. So this is a very serious issue, and I don't think we'll get an easy answer to this, but I think we must go back to the bottom of the problem. Let us appoint the right people at the right places with the necessary skills. There we must start, and then we can start the service delivery. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much,
Thank you, Chair. My name is Wattie Watson. I'll refrain from commenting on the Auditor General's report suffice to say thank you. And I know there's a lot of areas where improvement is sought, but I think we're at the right stage to do the right things on the 18th of May. But that's not a political point I'm making. I'm just saying that there should be people in municipalities that can do the jobs. Chair, I have one question, and that is, maybe I'm stupid that I don't understand, but on slide 3, that's where we begin really to dissect, and looking at 237 municipalities out of the 283. But the Auditor General said very little about the 46 that had not yet prepared the audit reports as I see it. Maybe you could just explain to me, because this whole report is about the 237 that were investigated. What about the other 46, which I find under the heading on that slide, that prior opinion on audit outstanding for 2009-2010, and then just a small observation, I'm sure it's just an error, but on page 19, the second last column refers to municipalities under administration in bracket section 139 of the Municipal Finance Management Act. Surely that should be section 139 of the Constitution. Just a question.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, my question actually is not for the AG alone, but it's for this House, even to yourself. Chair, I'm disturbed about this thing of late and non-submission or compliance in time with the laws. Because when something happens into the municipality, we don't do anything. Maybe if we can learn, like, penalizing the municipalities, do something so that they must know that we are not going to do that anymore. We need to take action immediately. AG's office must work with the provincial and the national and the NCOP in time, so that we must put a date and say from the 25th of March we submit, end date is 31 and it's no more. If you don't submit in those 5 days or whatever days, there's going to be a fine that you need to pay, or you're not going to get the particular grant that you need, you must get, you're going to get half. And but you must give us full service delivery. Then maybe it's going to work for us. The issue of the consultants, I've got an issue of this problem of consultants. You go and hire a consultant that is asking a lot of money. But on the other end, the municipality is still getting a disclaimer. Other consultants, we must get into the issue of consultants. What kind of consultants do we want? Because they only decide for, even the consultants are not straight to the municipalities, because it's that maybe the consultants that the Get Rich Schemes want, that they just come and work, and as long as things are not, because sometimes they just work there to do the things. When they go out, the people doesn't even know the job what to do anymore. They must all wait and for the consultants again to come up. Now, issues like that, maybe if we can identify where must they get the consultants, who to interact, and they must teach the people inside the municipality the work. Maybe it's going to work. Sometimes we've got slow thinkers and that sharp thinkers because of I can practically do the work, but I cannot think quick. But practically I can do it good. We need to look on that issues because of... I keep on asking myself, we say, okay, we do have a problem on the tons. Then Kimberly says on the tons, self and it won't have up with the old municipalities that are there. But let us help them. settlement. But now also we must do something to help them so that they must get there. But the issue is we have to go and try and find out, Chair, what we are going to do, because this light must improve drastically better than now for 2012. Otherwise, we must, if 2012 it doesn't change, we must forget about 2014. I thank you.
Thank you. Also, yes.
Thank you, Limpopo. We want to express gratitude that the Auditor General came here. To give us a roadmap on what is expected of public office bearers. It is very important that we put this framework, because normally politicians and various committees of the legislature and members of the executive, they think that the Auditor General is their public enemy number one, whereas he's supposed to be the best friend and the person who is supposed to ensure that they best perform their duties well. And sometimes portfolio committees on the Treasury, they will say that, you see, we deal with the finance on a day-to-day basis and monitor them every 3 months, but the Auditor General does a post-mortem over a dead body, which is already dead. But I think that that post-mortem from the Office of the Auditor General does help us to plan and map the best way forward. So this is a role which we must uphold and be very proud of, and that it is a constitutional responsibility. The other issue which I find particularly in our province, Limpopo, is that the Office of the Auditor General always inform us in time that on this time we'll come to do this, and there are time frames in the Constitution. But they may come there, they find that maybe 2 or 3 departments are ready to be audited. That delays the process. And that also delays the budgeting process, because the Auditor General would want to make specific recommendations. And as heads of portfolio committees, we also look in public accounts on what the Auditor General has said, so that when we sit at the committees in the Treasury, we try to check with the department. Given the Auditor General's recommendation, what have you done about those recommendations? Are you complying? It comes to the question of compliance. Because we want to see that every department take the recommendations of the Auditor General, so that if they are not done, we say public accounts follow this issue regarding this particular department, because these were the recommendations of the Auditor General. So that issue is very, very critical if we are to maintain a thread of accountability. Probably the particular bill we passed yesterday in the NCOP regarding the division of revenue, it may assist municipalities, particularly when it comes to the IDPs. Because municipalities, they will come up with an IDP. Next year, they change it. And now that it is gazetted, it will be easier for the Auditor General that, no, it is gazetted, it cannot easily be changed without proper channels to be followed. Therefore, the Auditor General will be in a better position to do this. Lastly, Chair, the conditional grant is one source of concern, which is, makes it very difficult for the Auditor General to look into this issue, because the municipalities, they are given a conditional grant. So we ask the Treasury, ourselves as a province, that they must monitor, and the Office of the Premier, which deals with municipalities in terms of public administration, monitor the conditional grants. And actually, the bill passed yesterday, it calls for close scrutiny of these conditional grants, because you give them a conditional grant for floods, they use it to pay salaries, they do this and that. And when the Auditor General comes there, they simply abscond. They can wait all day. There are reports in certain municipalities where DBSA and the Auditor General, they go there, they wait for the whole week with nobody showing. So that is something which we must insist that we must be slaves of procedure, so that we can make government and local government work. Salga 2, There is a case in which SALGA is very effective, but there is a time in which SALGA does not have oversight over municipalities. But we are happy now that we are seeing SALGA flexing its muscles. We think this is augur well. I want to thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Matilda.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Chair, maybe let's welcome the report from the AG. But our experience on the ground, Chair, is that there are worse things. And I must indicate, Chair, that in terms of the Section 139 interventions, the picture we have painted here is just nothing. There are worse things. I mean, I can tell you in the Free State, we were on a Section 139 intervention there, where a CFO and a municipal manager signed a check for themselves of close to R1 million. To date, those people are still earning salaries. They've been changing from one municipality to another municipality. You know? But nothing has been done to that specific case. Now, if you go to the Northwest, it's worse. Close to 70% of municipalities are under Section 139. And the situation is very bleak there. Unless something is done, that the provinces and these committees sitting national assist and intervene, because even the department, I mean, a person was suspended in the Free State and he was appearing in the High Court for fraud, but he was appointed by the department to become an administrator in the Northwest. You see, unless some of these issues have been dealt with, I want to plead with the leadership in the NCOP and in the NA to actually assist these committees to go into oversight, because we haven't done oversight. The only thing we did over municipalities, the only thing that we did was to intervene in terms of Section 139, because the Constitution compels us to do that. I mean, generally, go to Mpumalanga, the AG says, you know, there are two extremes in Mpumalanga. You're correct. But the situation is bad in Mpumalanga. We have been there in terms of Section 129. We can tell you what the situation is all about. Now, we're saying this picture, we welcome this picture, but the picture is worse. I mean, there's nothing coming out of Limpopo. But if you take this annexure, it tells you that Limpopo is in a bad situation. How many disclaimers are here from Limpopo? No? But the provincial leadership or government of Limpopo is hiding this particular picture. You see, they are hiding this picture. It's as though Limpopo is good, is clean, and all those things. You know, that is the situation we are faced with. Unless people are prepared to act, people are prepared to do proper oversight, we are able to can move in and deal with some of this. I'm not sure your people that goes to these particular municipalities and provinces, AG, must at some point also assist you to deal with these issues. Because when I was in Skopa in Gauteng, it was clear also that even the AG's office has a role to play. You know, there are things that they do that I think are not correct. And that those are the findings from Skopa. You know, because we have to question a number of issues that the AG's office is dealing with in as far as some of these particular matters are concerned. Because sometimes it is not the true picture of what is happening in those particular areas. There are worse areas that the AG is not bringing up. And those are the, you know, the experience we have gone through, and we think working together possibly will assist us to make sure that we change the situation in the country. But I must just plead to my chief here that some committees are given space to go and do real oversight and assist to change the situation on the ground. Thank you, sir. I'm referring to my chief Tau here. My chief Tau here. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. Just a comment, Chair. I just want to make comment specifically in the submission to the house. Chairperson, issues of local government. I'm from the Northwest. We had a closed session with the AG, I think maybe it's last month. But the reality of the issues of local government are historical and political in nature, both administrative. All of us, we must be come to a point and where we admit that indeed some way we failed. In some way the situation needs to be corrected. And I think the majority of speakers have alluded to the fact that come May the 18th, it will be an opportunity for us that we must correct the situation. That is the reality, the fact. Precisely because you see the question that has been raised there, it's a naked information that is there to be utilized by all of us as the leadership. But reality is that, for an example, as given scenario, if you check the page 20 on the slide, it shows both of us that particularly on the issue of oversight from all of us, both at the provincial level and as well at the national level, and so, because you see, one thing I've observed is that, for example, the NCOP will come at provincial level for once a week, for example. You see? Now, our approach to oversight, it's then ask yourself that we go to an oversight for a single municipality, then we come back. Then we report holistically that it's just a random sampling. For example, in the sense we've got 24 municipalities. Then out you visit only one region, for example, one district. Then you make your sampling around everything that is there, that this is the situation that is happening there, and which is not a correct info. So I'm saying to AG, for example, submission around the door to door that you want to still continue to embark on, AG, it will be also important. The issue that you also raised about the orientation with or training for the new leadership, it is important. It must be enhanced. So I'm making that submission to you, AG, that it's critical, the door-to-door and the orientation week. So let's get involved. And one other thing that has been raised by the latter speaker, for an example, with regard to, because in the reality in Northwest is that you've got Section 139B, Honorable Chair, which majority of them are under that administration. If you can quantify the results in terms of turnaround strategy to date, ever since that section was invoked, and the deployment of those administrators, it is still questionable. It is still questionable because the result does not show any progress justification to date. Now, one will ask, yes, this was political, but what any impact did it do? Chair, to be frank, that is the reality on the ground. It has never made much change, because you will expect that the terms of reference particular will bring around the issues that have been identified by the AG. That those people that are deployed there are going to turn around the situation that way, which is not the same. But obviously, we want to see things changing to the better. But we are optimistic. We have made commitment as the local to the AG that we will want to intensify our oversight work. Much important. And as well, we also want to ensure, for example, the issue there. MPAC, the Municipal Public Accounts Committee as well, will also be important, because as we move forward, we need to check in terms of as well of the composition of those people who will be sitting there. It will also be critical, because you can't oversight yourself, you can't supervise yourself, it will not work. So I'm just saying, this is one of the things that we need to see, that we try to bring a change, because we are all of us worried to have Chair that you deploy somebody from COPTA in the National Department to the Northwest. The same person there in Lakamudrimnema did not do any change to date. That person comes and then he employs the MM while there is still an MM there. So that is the use of public funds that is being spent unwisely. In our municipality, in one municipality in Swahili, for instance, you've got the administrator. The administrator, when it comes, the MM is suspended. There is a new MM, 18 MM that is being appointed. The new 18 CFO. What? Now, you can't understand how these situations work, but I'm saying, I agree to such an extent with the AG. The political will in this case is critical. The political will, it is critical, and we can change the face of government. Not like things cannot come right. No, if us, we can just have a consensus and agree to change and shape ourselves, then things can come to the better. We must never say that things will not change. We must have a good intention that things will change. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Now, we don't export MMs to other provinces from the Free State.
We only export groups to other.
Now, Chairperson, I think the issue that I want to raise, and I think I'm glad the Auditor General has raised the issue about SALGA. Because I think they're not really playing their part. And I can speak from our province, from the Free State itself. I've asked the chairperson of SALGA straight, you know, what is he doing about the situation in the provinces? And up till now, I haven't got a clear answer from them. So their role and function in seeing that we can get clean orders by 2014 is very important. But then they must now come to the party. They just can't sit there and earn salaries and have meetings when and they think it's suitable for them. They must really come to the party now. If I can give an example, even on the Division of Revenue, when we have public hearings in the Free State, SALGA was there for 2 minutes. Then they ran out and they left us with a submission that was made by SALGA on a national level to the NCOP. And I still can't understand that, you know, on a bill like the Division of Revenue, where most of the municipalities derive their income from, they got nothing to say about it. So I really think we also need capacity building in SALGA itself, not only in the councillors, but of course also in SALGA. So I'm glad that the Auditor General has raised it, that he had a discussion with SALGA, but what I want to request from him, what was SALGA's commitment? What are they saying they're going to do so that we can also in the province, from a public accounts committee perspective, know what we can call him to order and ask him, you know, to come to the party. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I guess there is no other person who is speaking.
I'm very much happy that people, thank you very much, AJ. I'm very much happy that people are crying. I hope that people will go back and correct the situation. You see, Northwest, that JJ Madol is the biggest crook. He's saying he's not exporting people from the Free State, but they have recommended him to be there. JJ Madol.
No, that is their cross pollination of ideas.
Chairperson, I'm thinking in terms of the 80% of new councillors, almost 80% of new councillors coming in after the 18th of May. Is there any chance? I think this is a wake-up call to receive a global picture of what is happening around the country. But I would think that it would be quite necessary that for incoming councils after May, that such a presentation be made, so that municipalities can get an idea and a sense of the urgency in addressing this problem. So I think it would be quite good if in the capacity building programs that are run right at the beginning, you know, of this the new term, that such a presentation be made to municipalities. I think it would set the tone for this term. Thanks, Chief.
All right, Honourable Bellefeld.
Honourable Chair, thank you. It's my second opportunity, and I'm going to be very short because I wanted to reply to the Honourable Lady's comments. One of the biggest things that we must realise, and I think that is part of our problem, is that is the division between party and governance. And that is our biggest problem is when political parties interfere in governments by forcing people to appoint people who cannot do their jobs. And I hope this is one thing that we're going to learn out of it, motivate and organize. And I would like also to echo what our colleagues from the Free State said about the role of SELGA. Really, it's costing us a fortune, and I don't think we get 1% of the value for money. Thank you.
I think we must restrain to talk about political parties so that we don't provoke politics when we are dealing with this.
Sorry, I didn't provoke politics, but I said that we must get a clear line between governance and political parties.
All right. But you heard me, what I'm saying. Honorable, and then I thought the danger will come.
Chair, this is my last question. Last year when I was here, there was also two municipalities that is under Section 139 from the Northern Cape. And when I make a follow-up, the department told me that it was under Section 139, and it's no more. Now I come back again here, there's also two again under Section 139. Now, I don't know who is lying when. I'm going to make a follow-up because I have to go right inside the issue of the Section 139. Now, maybe if the AG can just give me those two municipalities so that I can identify it right. If I have to drive down there, then I have to find out from the AG what is the findings and all that. Thank you, Chair.
All right, maybe that will get the information. But as far as the SOP is concerned, we have not yet received anything in terms of that. But you must be also take cognizance of the fact that there are two Section 139s, so that we don't confuse issues.
Sure.
There is a Section 139 that the SOP is obliged to deal with Section 139 of the Constitution. And there is the Section 139 of Municipal Finance Management Act, which is a discretionary Section 139 of the MEC of province to support whatever they think they would want to support or intervene. So we shouldn't confuse them. You might find most of them are Section 139 from the provinces which the Parliament does not have a jurisdiction on. And therefore, as we deal with Section 139, we must be able to check. Is it the constitutional one or is it that one, the discretionary one? Because the discretionary one is ongoing work of the MEC in support of their own municipalities. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Now, I thought from the department side, we should also just thank the Audit General for this presentation. You know, although we're responsible for local government, we always find any opportunity to learn and get new insights, and really I think this was very insightful. But Chair, I thought it important to say from where I'm sitting that maybe the committee must consider a follow-up meeting. And the reason why I'm suggesting that, because I think maybe the picture has not been completed in this discussion. On the one hand, we have got the feedback from the AG, which is excellent. I think we will not dispute this. But what is missing is to understand what government is doing in response to all of these things. And I think that will complete the discussion and will allow a much more fruitful discussion. So I would want to ask the committee and the Budu chairperson to consider maybe getting our department to make a detailed presentation on Operation Clean Audit, to get National Treasury to come here and make a presentation on their financial management support program, and thirdly, to get SELGA to come and also come and make a presentation. And I think that will really complete this discussion. And that's the only suggestion I wanted to make. But otherwise, thank you very much for the input. Thank you.
Thank you. The point I'm going to emphasize here, which I want to allow us to deviate out of that, is that this is a tool of oversight for us. That must be noted, especially public representatives. Whatever happens, that one will welcome, would have the department, the National Treasury, will have Salga, including them again. We can have them in one house. But this for us, we take it as a tool to go out there to try to make sure that we support and build government at local level. I think that is the main important objective of this meeting. I would then allow the AG for some of those issues that need clarity.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair. Maybe I can start on the last point that DG has made, which is very important, around the completion of the picture. Our intention in this respect, because we do have a picture from all the players, and we will be painting that picture in the general report that will be tabled in all the legislatures, and also reconfirm that picture is in the manner in which it was presented by all these players. Because out of these engagements, as I've indicated, we've had very fruitful and constructive responses from all the players that I had mentioned at the introduction of my talk. And we intend to make that picture very transparent to everyone. But not only that, but the follow-up to that picture, so that it's not only the commitments that are made at a point in time, and then those commitments cease to get followed through. And in this respect, maybe I can also highlight the fact that this picture on page 19 and 20 is not looking like this because there are no initiatives. This picture is looking like this because there are initiatives, but what we lack is the momentum to follow through and get to the bottom of the end result, which is the service delivery and the good government. And it's that we want to recommit to on our side as part of our quarterly follow-up. To say we have engaged, we have committed, are we doing what we've committed? So that this picture also does not only get reflected annually when we do this annual results, but we can also see it continuously every quarter. And that's why, Chair, we've committed our own resources to make this follow-up at all these three levels of government, provincial, national, as well as at local government at this level, to confirm that we leave no stone unturned in this respect. And having said that, Chair, what therefore will be our intended approach? Our intended approach, as the Honourable from the Northern Cape has highlighted, I think that was, is not for us to pick up what has not been done, but rather lend credibility to what has been done. And I think that this statement is important, Chair, because it's not going to help us to come to the municipality, to come to the province, to come to national sphere of government on both sides of the pendulum, oversight and executive, and pick up that has been promised has not been done. Because that's going to land us squarely on where we are today. We need to, when we come there, to get an indication that the control environment is so watertight that every government executive and representative is doing what they are supposed to be doing as the government representative of the people. So, and I know this may not be clear now, but we'll try to emphasize this also in the general report, that our monitoring is not meant to replay this tape, but our monitoring is meant to reaffirm that things are heading for the better, because now oversight is doing what they're supposed to do. Executive management in government is doing what they're supposed to do, because as we know, all this is like this today because we have not necessarily done what we're supposed to have done in the manner in which it was expected of us. We have learned from that, we accept that, we appreciate that, but we're saying let's move forward now with this new, can I say, lease of life that will take us to a different result going forward. And having said that, Chair, I think that sums up most of the sentiments that came out of this discussion today. in terms of supporting them, in terms of accepting them, and that we will reflect them in the general report. But in doing that, we also would like to have the NCOP-specific commitments in terms of how governance will be refined and remodeled in order to respond to the effectiveness of governance by the NCOP in supporting the province and supporting the municipalities. So that we've got that total picture as well that can be reflective of what we know and are all happy it will yield the right results in local government. The two issues that specifically need to be clarified, Section 139 is very confusing for us as well. As I indicated, we see many interventions, discretionary and otherwise, in municipalities. But when we look at the basis of those interventions, we struggled to see how they were formalized. And for that reason that we've got only 7 municipalities where that has been formalized, and we could have evidence that this is indeed in keeping with the municipal interventions that were supposed to have been done. And I say in Free State, many municipalities have got administrators. Northwest, many municipalities have got administrators. Northern Cape, some used to have, some still have, but very few of those have got evidential formalities that we could say this is indeed in terms of the Constitution, this is indeed in terms of the MFMA. So it's an area that we still need to work on, and if the NCOP and provincial oversight can help us with that, I think that will clarify that situation. That's why that picture on slide 19 is as vague as it is on the second last column. But we only premised it on the MFMA Section 139, not the constitutional one. With regards to, I think it was slide 3, municipalities that have not as yet been audited to completion, the ones that I think it's about 47 of them. For those, my comment was that they are municipalities which last year, and that's why we put that picture specifically in just go to slide 3, please. As municipalities that we can speculate, and I even said it's not important, it's not ideal for us to speculate, but we can draw some inferences based on the information we have historically, that the of the 33 municipalities that had disclaimers, and of that 10 or thereabouts have had their results finalized subsequently. And of that 10, it's basically 50-50 those that have moved to qualifications, and the other half has remained with disclaimers. And if you look at the condition of leadership, the condition of governance in those that have not been finalized, especially in the Northwest, in my view, there's no hope that they will end up with any other outcome other than where they currently are or were last year. Unless there is serious intervention, and we've held, as our honorable member from Northwest has alluded, a very constructive discussion when we went to the Northwest. We had a very fruitful discussion with the Premier as well, who did acknowledge the minimal intervention that has been done, even at the provincial administrative level. And therefore, a lot of work has got to be done in that province if really were to save 17 municipalities that could not submit in financial statements. Because that's the majority of municipalities that did not account. It's an unusual situation. So I think all in all, I appreciate all these comments, and I can only say that based on that, we will be more vigilant on our side in terms of this quarterly monitoring and be more vigilant in terms of these engagements. I know we don't have at the moment a structured arrangement to engage with NCOP on a quarterly basis, but it's something I would like us to firm up as well, so that this tool of oversight that you've made reference to is also given some measure of credibility. Then that way, as has been mentioned, that we all need to work together, we can make sure that does happen. I also taken note of some of the issues that were made reference to about the scope of concerns around the AG office. I appreciate that. And I think with all these quarterly engagements that we've committed to, we'll get to a mode where all these uncertainties and the insights that also relate to our conduct as well can be attended to and cleared going forward. That's the only humble response that one can give to that. That no man is infallible, and the more we talk, the better we can be collectively. So I do welcome that suggestion. Chair, at the risk of repeating what has been said, I perhaps let me stop there and then look forward to a general report that will give us a starting point to an effective monitoring and oversight going forward.
Thank you very much for the response. I will then allow our house chair to move up to us.